You're listening to KMUN. No National Guard troops can be deployed to Portland at least until Tuesday. That's according to a new order from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which made the decision on Friday. The appeals court said it wanted more time to decide whether to rehear arguments on a decision the court made earlier in the week that found federalized troops could deploy to Portland. The order is the latest in a flurry of legal action in the fight over whether President Donald Trump can deploy hundreds of National Guard troops to protect Portland's U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility. That site has been the focus of protests for several months. The temporary stay expires at 5 p.m. on Tuesday. The ruling came the same day a lower court took up a separate but related matter. U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut held a hearing Friday morning on whether to dissolve a temporary restraining order barring National Guard members anywhere in the country from being sent to Portland.
I'm Skylar Butenchin. This is KMUN. The federal shutdown has led to pauses in payment for forestry work in Oregon. Jefferson Public Radio's Justin Higginbottom reports on how that's impacting wildfire prevention businesses.
Fall is the busy season when it comes to forestry work like fuels reduction. Summer fire restrictions have ended and the snow hasn't arrived. But Armando Lopez, who owns DL Reforestation in Jackson County, says the federal shutdown has put his work on hold. He says he's waiting on the government to reopen so he can be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars.
For us, I mean, this one, I'm just so eager. Like every day I check the news or something if it'll open up. I had like 40 employees. I don't think they're going to stay here for a week or two without doing anything.
He relies on foreign workers with H-2B visas who have a limited amount of time in the country. The Oregon Department of Forestry says delays are varied. Some state, private, and tribal projects are still funded, but payments from the Bureau of Land Management and the Natural Resource Conservation Service have stopped. I'm Justin Higginbottom in Ashland.
Oregonians could have a chance to open primaries again. For years in Oregon, elections have happened the same way. Democrats are able to vote in the Democratic primaries and Republicans in the Republican primary. But some people would like to see the state open its primary system. That includes former Democratic Governor Ted Kulongowski. He's part of an effort to get two initiatives on the ballot that would overhaul the state's election system. Kulongowski is backing an initiative to amend the state's constitution to end partisan primaries. He's backing another initiative that would create a process where all candidates are listed on a single ballot in the primary. The top two candidates would advance to the general election. The ballot backers would need more than 100,000 signatures to put the issues to voters in November 2026.
For people who don't get insurance through their employer, open enrollment, the time of year when you can sign up for a new health plan, starts on November 1st. As Amelia Templeton reports, prices are up and government subsidies are in limbo this year.
About 3% of Oregonians buy private health insurance at a discount using the marketplace created by the Affordable Care Act. People going online in November to renew their coverage are going to see the amount they pay each month go up by several hundred dollars. Insurers have raised their prices a little, and government subsidies are shrinking a lot. That's after Republicans opted not to extend some of them in their big tax and spending bill. Democrats in Congress want the subsidies restored as a condition of ending the government shutdown. The Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson called the subsidies a boondoggle that enriches insurance companies. Open enrollment lasts until January 15th. So there's still some time to see what Congress does before picking a health plan. In Portland, I'm Amelia Templeton.
It's not only fall and football season. It's also bird flu season. KLCC's Karen Richards reports.
The Oregon Department of Agriculture says cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI, increase now through November. Wild birds, especially migrating ducks and geese, transmit the disease, says state veterinarian Ryan Scholes.
Really, all of the recommendations boil down to keeping domestic poultry away from wild waterfowl.
Scholes says indirect contact is also a concern.
We've had a couple cases in the past of duck or goose hunters, where they've gone hunting, cleaned the birds they harvested, and then rinsed their patio off into their chicken coop, and that infected their chickens.
Scholl says 5 Oregon flocks have been affected so far. Those backyard birds were quarantined and then humanely euthanized. He says any domestic bird illnesses should be reported to the ODA right away. I'm Karen Richards reporting.
Abortions by telehealth went way up after the end of Roe v. Wade, even in states where abortion remained legal. KUOW's Eilish O'Neill has more.
In 18 states where abortion is still legal, orders for abortion meds doubled after the fall of Roe in 2022. Anna Fiastro is a researcher at the UW School of Medicine. She says that might be in part because press coverage meant more people learned about the option.
Telehealth is on the rise. About 1 in 4 of all abortions in the United States are now completed via telehealth, and I think that will continue to grow. It's particularly important for those far from clinic-based care.
Fiaster says the people most likely to order abortion meds by telehealth are those who've had a previous abortion, those who are very early in their pregnancies, and those who live more than 100 miles from the nearest clinic-based option.
That story comes to us from Eilish O'Neill with KUOW.
More than 3,700 farms closed from 2017 to 2022 in Washington state, according to the Census of Agriculture. NWPB's Renee Diaz takes a look at how the agricultural landscape in the Wenatchee Valley has changed.
Chris Rader is a historian at the Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center. She says Wenatchee was a rich place to grow tree fruit, but the town has changed.
We're the apple capital of the world. The town is no longer filled with apple orchards.
Brady Karstetter, who is a farmer in Grant County, says farming has become too expensive for many small growers.
We're going to price ourselves right out of the market if we're not careful. But do you want your food grown in your backyard by someone you know that you can talk to? Or do you want it to be grown by a corporation or somewhere on the other side of the world?
Karstetter says inflation has made it harder for growers to make a profit. Packing houses set prices, leaving small growers with little control. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
You're listening to News on KMUN. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to KMUN. We turn now to local news across KMUN's listening area.
Authorities are investigating the recent shooting deaths of seals in the Willapa River area. According to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, 2 dead seals were found at the Monahan Landing Road boat launch on Friday, October 17th. Sergeant Todd Dielman with Fish and Wildlife is leading the investigation. He says the department is unsure how many seals have been killed in Pacific County, but that it may be up to 6. Washington and Oregon state officials have been authorized by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to euthanize sea lions in specific locations on the Columbia River, where the mammals consume large numbers of salmon. However, seals and sea lions are both protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which makes it a federal crime to kill the animals. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com.
A Tillamook County farmer and retired teacher has announced he will run against State Representative Cyrus Javity to represent the North Coast area in Salem. Max Sherman is the 2nd Republican candidate to announce he will run against Javity in 2026 for the District 32 seat, which includes Clatsop and Tillamook counties and part of Columbia County. In September, Javity announced that he had left the Republican Party to join the Democratic Party. Sherman feels Javity betrayed people who thought the lawmaker was going to be more on the conservative side of things. Central to Sherman's campaign is addressing the shortage of affordable housing in the area and lowering costs. Sherman also says he wants to revisit the state's habitat conservation plan, which significantly reduced timber harvest on state land, particularly in Clatsop and Tillamook counties. County leaders worry about the loss of revenue as a result. Sherman says another priority is addressing food insecurity, which he says is a key issue for residents on the North Coast. Historian Chris Honnell has also announced he will run against Javity as a Republican. Honnell's platform is on safe communities, better infrastructure, addressing the housing crisis, and bringing back jobs to the area. This story comes to us in part through a news partnership with The Historian, online at dailyhistorian.com. You're listening to KMUN. For years, city leaders in Astoria have been talking about what to do about the Astoria Library and the nearly 60-year-old building that houses it. Multiple mayors have helped facilitate discussions and proposals to build a new library or renovate the existing building. In 2017, the Astoria City Council approved a plan to renovate the building, essentially going back to a plan that had been proposed several years before. They expected the work to cost around $5 million and be done by 2020. But those plans hit snags and delays, and the cost rose from $5 million to $7 million to around $10 million. In 2022, voters overwhelmingly passed an $8 million bond to help fund library renovations. Work on the building was officially underway last fall. A temporary library opened in another building downtown, but patrons haven't set foot in the actual library building for more than a year. On Saturday, the doors finally opened up. KMUN correspondent Sean Davis attended a grand opening celebration Saturday afternoon and brings us this report.
400 to 500 Astorians braved the rainy October afternoon last Saturday in order to celebrate the reopening of the Astoria Public Library. The event opened up with a speech by Mayor Sean Fitzpatrick, who wanted everyone to know that the momentous event was definitely a group effort. Mayor Fitzpatrick pointed out all of the elected officials who were in attendance, like City Councilor Elizabeth Adams, City Councilor Andy Davis, City Councilor Vance Lump, County Commissioner Vice Chair Courtney Bangs, the City Manager, the Chief of Police, and many more. Mayor Fitzpatrick made it known that the person who really spearheaded the renovation of the Astoria Public Library was former Mayor Arlene Lemieux, a former librarian who was elected mayor in November of 2014 and served until 2019. She began her speech by saying, "I will probably cry because this is a big day." I caught up with the former mayor and I asked her what the opening of the new library meant to her.
My late husband Cliff and I, the library is just both of our love. And so we were both on the library board. I was later on the library foundation board and chaired that for a couple of years. I've been a librarian for 38 years, 21 as a children's librarian, and then 17 as the librarian at the Columbia River Maritime Museum.
Wow, so what's it mean that it's finally here?
Oh my, it's very emotional. I love libraries, and I think they're so critical for the community. And I'm just thrilled the way it turned out. It's better than I ever dreamed it would be. Now it's wide open and bright lights, and I love the meeting room downstairs because I think it's so important to have a room like that that's in a public space for the community to meet.
After the speeches were over, hundreds of people wandered around admiring the new murals and checking out books. Some made commemorative buttons in the new teen meeting room, watched free magic shows put on by Seth Howard, or learned about the Astoria Library Friends Association in the new Veteran Memorial Flag Community Room, or they listened to acoustic music by Astoria resident and military veteran Gary Kaiski. I found Mayor Fitzpatrick and local chef Chris Holland sitting in the comfortable new chairs in the main reading room and asked them how many people do they believe showed up to the reopening.
There was a lot of heads. We came in a little bit late, and the entire main floor was filled.
Yeah, all the way to the back there.
Yeah, we Yep.
So we could probably ask the fire department.
We should ask the fire department.
You're joking about shutting us down.
Yeah, they will say the limit was here.
I would say that's probably a good 4 or 5 hundred would be a good estimate.
Back in 2013, the City of Astoria commissioned the renovation study with the goal of making the library our community's favorite gathering place, accessible to everyone. The work, done by O'Brien Construction, started in September of 2024 and finished this month, on time and on budget, with a new basement area that includes small meeting rooms, a large community meeting room, and the city historian's new office. The main area is filled with light from the new floor-to-ceiling windows that replace the old solid concrete walls. It has a new circulation and checkout desk and a large children's area for readings and events. I asked City Councilor Elizabeth Adams what this new library will mean to our town.
I think that that means so much to each person individually, but I think the most important part is that it means is extended community and a place where people can connect and have extended community together. No matter what they believe politically or what life they lead or who they pray to, we can all come to the library and find community. No matter what we believe or what we think, this is something that we can all connect on and we can all be proud of and be interested in sharing with each other.
Thanks for listening. This is Sean Davis reporting for KMUN.
Mussel harvesting is now open from Cascade Head in Tillamook County to the California border. Ahead of the weekend, the Oregon Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife announced that marine biotoxin levels in this area had tested below the alert level. However, recreational mussel harvesting remains closed from Cascade Head north to the Washington state border. Razor clamming is open from the Columbia River to Cape Blanco, but is closed from Cape Blanco to the California border. Bay clamming is open coastwide. Recreational crabbing is open in bays, beaches, piers, jetties, and tide pools, and closed in ocean waters until November 30th. You're listening to news on KMUN. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch with us. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. Special thanks today to correspondent Sean Davis. He is one of the voices behind the show Rogue Cell, which you can catch on KMUN every fourth Thursday from 9 a.m. till 9:30 a.m. KMUN news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. You're listening to KMUN.